I will now ask those representing the petitioners to state their names for the record and offer testimony in support of their petition to withdraw Milton Township from the expedited permitting area. So if you folks want to come up. I would just say to the audience, we have allocated some time after this presentation for the public to make comments. We have quite a list of people who signed up. That's why I'm trying to rush this along a little bit to give you more time. But at some point, we're going to have to allocate the time between the number of you that have signed up to speak.
Good afternoon. Thank you all. My name is Sarah McDaniel. I'm an attorney who has recently been engaged by the petition circulator, who I will have the folks here with me introduce themselves. I'm going to start by giving a presentation on the legal standards that you're going to be applying here, and then after my presentation, which will be the longer part of it, all three will be speaking to their own specific concerns. So introductions.
My name is Violeta Wisbicki. I'm the petition circulator. I reside in Massachusetts, but I'm a landowner in Milton.
Yes, my name is Peter Fetchko, and I live on Billings Hill in Woodstock.
My name is Warren Hillquist. I'm a resident of Brattleboro, Vermont, and I own, property in both Woodstock and Milton.
Is that okay in the back? Great. So, good afternoon. One of the things that I'd like to start with, in addition to thanking you all for being here and the staff for pulling all this information together and coordinating everyone, is clarify a little bit about what we are not doing here. The staff gave an excellent review of the legal standards for you, and I'm going to be talking about those as well. Especially after having spent the last hour plus listening to some very specific information about a project that may or may not come to pass, it's very important to remember that this is not a development permit application, and this is not substantive review of that project that they have talked about that might be being built on Bryant and Chamberlain Mountains. I do want to chime in Mr. Benson's testimony. While very interesting, again, the specifics of what they may want to be doing on the property isn't germane to the broader question that is in front of you today. It's also not a referendum on whether wind power is good or bad. A lot of the testimony will talk about some of the general benefits, general economic benefits. We heard some of that, and some of the general concerns about wind. That's, again, not what this is about. One thing that's very important you're going to hear a lot more from me about in detail is that this is not a review of whether allowing wind in Milton is consistent with a comprehensive land use plan. Ms. Prescott from Stantec just went through her presentation really flipping that question on its head, trying to suggest that wind in Milton is consistent, therefore you should keep it in the expedited wind permitting area. That's the opposite of the question that you need to ask, and I'll talk about that a lot more detail. So what we are doing here today, as you've heard, is of course we're doing a rulemaking. We're trying to decide what should the default rules be in all of Milton Township, not just on Bryant Mountain, not just in the project area, but in the entire township. The legislature's established some removal standards, and if those standards are met, there are two standards that you're going to have to vote on, and if those are met, then you do rule that the Milton Township will be removed from the expedited wind area. What that means is that wind development will be discouraged in that area. It is prohibited only to the extent that you would have to then go through the rezoning or the readmission process. I think that your staff did a very good job discussing how a piece of property could be included back into the area through the rezoning process or the readdition of the specific project area. And I do want to emphasize that some folks have said that the standards to remove are just a simple mirror of the standards to add. And that's not exactly true, because this removal is looking at the entire township. And if they want to do a wind project, whether it's EverPower or some other wind energy developer who might come down the line, if they want to do that, they're going to be looking at the specific area of their specific project. And in that situation, we will have some specific information. We heard, for example, just a few moments ago that the closest turbine will be 2.1 miles from the bat hibernaculum. Well, we have no idea whether that's true or not. I don't think that they're trying to lie to us, but they're not at the point where they know where exactly all of the wind turbines are going to be. And so when you go back to try to add an area back into the expedited permitting area, those sort of site-specific issues will be before you at that time. But they're not before you today. I think you already do have a... Where's that pointer? No. Again, you did get a quick review but from the staff, but just to remind you, Milton Township is right here. The wind area, Bryant Mountain is here. Chamberlain Mountain is right here. You will be hearing from Peter Fetchko, who owns property in Woodstock, right at the bounder here on Chamberlain Mountain, as well as Warren Hillquist, who owns property in both Milton and Woodstock on Chamberlain Mountain. Violetta owns property in Milton with views up to these particular areas. You also have Mount Zircon, Mount Bean, where the bat hibernaculum is in that vicinity, the state park. We did look at the ponds. You're going to be hearing more about these. You're also going to be seeing some photographs, not from us, but I know later in the public testimony. And, of course, the Androscoggin River, a great canoeing spot there as well. So this is the meat of it. What are the standards that you're going to be deciding today? And in order to remove from the wind permitting area, you have to decide that if eliminating wind power as a pre-approved land use within the entire township of Milton will not have an unreasonable adverse effect on the ability of the estate to meet its state goals, the 3,000 megawatts of wind power by 2020, which is that same 3,000 megawatts for land-based wind power by 2030, and to decide whether eliminating wind power as a pre-approved land use within the entire township is consistent with the principal values and the goals of the comprehensive land use plan. You heard some goals discussed today. I haven't heard anything about the principal values yet. We're going to be going through that in some specific detail. I also want to mention, these are the legal standards that you've got to apply. I'm the lawyer. I get to talk about the legal standards and try to frame the testimony that you're going to hear in terms of them. You're going to hear from a lot of people in the public today, many of whom I assume won't have attorneys with them. And their testimony about the parts of Milton and the general greater area and what are important to them, just because they're not quoting the jargon from the comprehensive land use plan doesn't mean that testimony can be ignored. The job for you is to put that testimony, mesh how that testimony and the evidence that they're discussing fits into whether or not it does, in fact, meet these standards, which we argue that they do. So the first standard is whether removing Milton will not cause an unreasonable adverse impact on the state's ability. I had quoted here again the 2020 standards, which were of the 3,000 megawatt standard for the state. They wanted 300 to be from coastal, and so 2,700 would have to be land-based. I did not add in on the slide the fact that there needs to be 3,000 megawatts of land-based power by the year 2030. Currently, we have about 927 megawatts either in production, in operation, or under construction right now. There's also a 250 megawatt project that is currently pending DEP review. That data, I'm not a wind expert, that data is from the testimony provided by the LUPC staff and the DEP. Also, an interesting point is in the ISO testimony, this is the pre-hearing comments that ISO New England submitted, they note that there are presently 3,631 megawatts of wind capacity projects pending with interconnection requests in northern and western Maine. I don't know any more details about that. You can't ask me a question about it, but that was in their written testimony. And certainly if those number of megawatts are already pending, And if, as we heard, it takes, you know, about 2 years to go through the process, I think that we're not going to have any problem reaching 3,000 megawatts of wind power by the year 2030 for sure. The other bit of information that I was able to find, it's not in the testimony, but there was a Maine Comprehensive Energy Plan update prepared in 2015. The effective date of that report was December 2014, and at that time, in addition to some of the projects that were discussed in the operating megawatts above, there's at least 1,000 megawatts of capacity in projects that were under preliminary consideration. I don't know if the Bryant Mountain project was part of that or not, but that sort of project that wasn't officially under application yet is the type that as of December 2014, there was 1,000 megawatts. So there are a lot of other issues with the energy. They did mention that they're not, even if everything goes fully as they've got planned and desired, they're not going to be applying until the first quarter of 2019. So again, we're not going to be looking at the 2020 deadlines. The fact that Bryant and Chamberlain Mountains may have good wind potential doesn't talk to whether or not the goals are going to be met. Their business decision, they've told you today, oh, if you vote to remove it, our project's dead. Well, that's a business decision of theirs. That has nothing to do with your standards about whether or not it should be a pre-approved project in the township of Milton. They also discussed their 10 suitability criteria, and under their analysis, of course, they thought that it was worth making the investment and going forward with. Their 10 criteria that they articulated in their testimony and written testimony are not your standards, and the developer's conclusion that they were satisfied is not a set conclusion. You get to decide whether the removal standards are satisfied. I found it very interesting to hear EverPower talking about the community values criteria that they themselves apply. I think you're going to hear from a lot of people today that will end up strongly suggesting that the community is not in favor of wind development in the Milton Township. One other aspect, some people have raised the question, since there was a goal to meet 2,000 megawatts by 2015, and well, if we're off our goals, then maybe every single possible project matters. You know, this potential 40 megawatts, since we haven't met our goal, it's important. We need to get there. Well, that's an argument that does not make sense. If every square foot of that expedited area was critical to meeting these goals, then this removal process would not have been created. In 2007, when the Wind Energy Act was first enacted, there was no removal process. You could try to add in an area, but you could not try to remove it. They didn't add that until 2015. And so at the time when the legislature was considering whether or not the removal process, giving the voice back to the citizens so that the citizens of these areas could decide, take on that planning function, is wind development appropriate for our township? When that decision was given back to the people in 2015, they'd already known that they were far from reaching their 2015 goal. So you can't really use that as the sort of inverse conversation about whether or not the standard has been met. You also have seen in your some of the submissions, there's a map of the transmission lines. And there was a question also about the transmission line. Obviously, Bryant Mountain is within a mile of one of the transmission lines. However, if you are to look at the map of the LUPC jurisdiction and look at the map of the transmission lines, many of the other townships that are still in the wind expedited permitting area are still in areas that have somewhat proximity to where those transmission lines are. Now, here's something you haven't heard yet. The second criteria requires that removing Milton from the expedited area has to be consistent with the principal values and the goals of the CLUP, the Comprehensive Land Use Plan. Back in the old 1997 version, they didn't specifically articulate the four principal values, but in the 2010 version, they did enact these four principal values: that the economic value of the jurisdiction is derived from working forests and farmlands, that there are diverse and abundant recreation opportunities, that there are diverse, abundant, and unique high-value natural resources and features, and there's a whole list that includes water resources, wildlife resources, and scenic resources. And then the natural character of the jurisdiction. And again, this principal value applies to the whole jurisdiction. And so they talk about both including the remoteness of the jurisdiction as well as the relative absence of development. Two different issues. So let's look at the first one. Let's look at the economic value of the jurisdiction. Again, having this as a principal value of the jurisdiction was enacted in 2010 after the expedited permitting area had already existed. And production of wind energy in the LUPC jurisdiction is not one of the principal values. Working forests, yes, they can be compatible with wind, but you don't need wind to have a working forest. The conservation easement that was discussed that covers a great deal of land area in Milton does allow active forestry. So forestry can mix with the conservation lands that are designed to protect wildlife as well. So the real question, the bottom line bullet here, is subjecting any of the wind developments that might be proposed for Milton to the rezoning process or a re-addition process is consistent with this value. Again, and this is where you really need to make sure you're asking the right question. Is removing Milton consistent with this value? Yes. Diverse and abundant recreation opportunities. What is important here is that they are talking about diverse recreation opportunities. Obviously, there's a lot of emphasis in the plan about the remote, pristine recreation and the core areas of the jurisdiction, and that's one type of recreation. However, there are more having recreation that is in the vicinity of existing population areas where the residents and the visitors can come and get their services met, having hotel rooms, that sort of thing, nearby to the different recreational opportunities is important. And so removing Milton does not impair this value at all. Removing Milton Township and allowing wind only if it passes the re-addition process is consistent with this principal value. It's definitely not inconsistent with the value. I think the most important issue today, and I think that you really could decide this whole thing on this one issue, is the protection of the unique high-value natural resources in the jurisdiction, including wildlife resources. Wind development is known to have fatal consequences for bats. The bat hibernaculum in Milton is one of three. One thing that wasn't raised in the written testimony from the folks who requested this review is the fact that bats are listed species now. We have one federally threatened bat species, and that federally threatened bat species, the long-eared northern myotis, is one of the types of bat species who does use caves for its and mines for its winter hibernaculum. And the other species in Maine, well, the federally threatened one is also listed as a state endangered bat. There's another state endangered bat and a threatened bat. And then all of the other species of bats in Maine are species of special concern. So these are, just the fact that these endangered species are there in Milton itself is enough to raise an eyebrow that they weren't, the 3 years of review so far by EverPower haven't identified their important status. Granted, the listings were happened last year in the spring of 2015, but that's certainly before this year's submission deadlines. So those endangered species are very important. The federally threatened bat species, when you look and see if critical habitat is going to be identified, on Fish and Wildlife's website, they discuss the fact that for endangered bat species, they're not identifying the critical habitat because identifying it has the wrong impact. When you identify the location of a bat hibernaculum, that encourages more people to visit and go see, which is much more disturbing, as well as the vandalism risks as well. So the fact that the critical habitat has not been designated does not mean that a known bat hibernaculum is not critical. It just means that they're trying to keep it quiet, which this proceeding doesn't help with very much. But nevertheless, that one of three bat hibernaculum in the whole state of Maine is within the township. And there are areas that's over on Mount Zircon, and there's part of the ridgelines over there that are not subject to the conservation easement where it's possible that wind might happen. We know that EverPower has four wind projects under development. He mentioned in his testimony, this is one of the Bryant Mountain one is one of them. We don't know if they have one planned elsewhere in Milton or if some other company has been looking at other areas of Milton Township for it. We have no idea. But this is a significant federally threatened species, state threatened species, and protecting its habitat is critical. I do want to respond. Attorney Brown talked about the best practical mitigation standard. That is, of course, something that's applied when you're getting to permitting, not at this level. But the best practical mitigation standard, having bat curtailment issues, sure, that might be great when you get to permitting, but for looking at environmental protection, there is a sort of pocket priority that people like to go to, and that is avoid, minimize, mitigate. So if possible, avoid the environmental damage. If possible, minimize. If you can't avoid it, then minimize the environmental damage. And if you have to do some environmental damage, then you're going to mitigate it. Well, the mitigation factors mean you're doing some damage. Bats are going to be killed. The rates at Spruce Mountain for bat fatalities, which is there in the vicinity, are, I think it was an average of 2 per year, at least in the first year of the survey. So mitigation may be possible at the permitting stage, but we're not at the permitting stage. So we're really talking about, is avoidance possible and is it a good idea? This is a state significant, federally significant resource, and we definitely should be avoiding damages by removing Milton from the expedited permitting area. The third principal value is the general natural character, the remoteness and the relative absence of development. And here you heard a great deal about how Milton is on the fringe and we're surrounded by municipal incorporated towns, so nothing can be particularly important there. Well, we do still have a relative absence of development, and particularly where we are down in the south, and we're a gateway to the many, many people coming to Bethel, coming to Newry, coming to Rumford for recreation. And so that relative absence of development in Milton, even though it's a little bit isolated from the core of the jurisdiction, is still an important part that needs to be protected. So that little Concord Pond right outside of Milton in I think that's in Woodstock, that state park there, when people go there, they get a remote type of experience. And so if you had more wind towers in that screen, you're eroding the remote experience that they get, even though they are still down here near the gateway resources. So now, back to the broad goals. The Comprehensive Land Use Plan names three broad goals. These have not materially changed in the last several years. Although, again, you may notice that wind energy is not one of the three broad goals of the jurisdiction. I've got specific slides for each of them. Support the management of all resources to enhance the living and working conditions of property owners and residents, to separate incompatible uses, and ensure continued availability of wildlife and other natural resource values. Again, the mountainous ridges form a great gateway coming into the Bethel area. Most importantly, again, the unique bat hibernaculum is critical here to some state and federally important wildlife species. So it is definitely consistent with this broad goal of the club to remove Milton from the expedited area.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Do you consider wind a resource?
So wind definitely is a resource.
Okay.
There's no doubt about that. The interesting thing in the CLUP is that the energy goals are listed not under the development goals. They're listed under the natural resource goals. So wind energy obviously is a natural resource. It's, you know, a sustainable, renewable resource, but it nevertheless does have some serious impacts on the other resources. And with the Comprehensive Land Use Plan, it is always a balancing act of how to balance these competing resources against each other, where you have something as sensitive and as critically important as a bat hibernaculum. I think that that must have a very significant weight when looking at the other areas. The second wind goal is conserving the natural resources primarily for fiber and food production, outdoor recreation, and plant and animal habitat. Again, interestingly, and getting some point to your question, this particular broad goal doesn't necessarily talk about energy production as a priority, but it does talk about the habitat values, and I won't continue repeating too much, but the bat hibernaculum is particularly unique at that statewide level. And so again, this goal, it is perfectly consistent with this goal to keep, to remove Milton from the expedited wind area. And the third broad goal is to maintain the natural character of certain areas having significant natural values and primitive recreation opportunities. And here again, the bat hibernaculum and the state park, Little Concord Pond, which gives you a unique primitive recreation opportunity, even though you're still in a gateway area, are important aspects. And it's perfectly consistent to keep Milton, to remove Milton from the expedited wind area. The comprehensive land use plan does then go through several different goals. You've heard some of them emphasized, and this is where I think it's important to keep in mind the way you're asking the question. The presentation you heard from Ms. Brown, and this woman from Stantec, they're focusing on how having wind in Milton is consistent with the CLUP. That's not the question. The question is if removing Milton from the expedited area is consistent with the CLUP. And that's a subtle difference, and I'm a lawyer, I like those subtle differences, but I think it's very important here because that is why these standards are different. So the location of the development goal, guiding the location of the development to protect animal habitat is part of that goal, bat hibernaculum, endangered species. They talked about, of course, the periphery of redirecting development towards the periphery of the jurisdiction. And just because, when you looked at, if you think back to those two slides that Nicholas showed us today that show the full area of the LUPC jurisdiction and what's in the expedited area and what's not in the expedited area, just because Milton is off on its own doesn't mean that it's abandoned to development. Okay? Directing development to the periphery serves the purpose of protecting the core. And so the core was never in the expedited area to begin with, and so that is key. And even if you remove Milton from the township, there are plenty of other areas in the LUPC jurisdiction, never mind out of the LUPC jurisdiction, but certainly in the LUPC jurisdiction, there are plenty of other areas in the periphery that still do have those access, some proximity to the transmission lines, and some other possibilities. So it's consistent with the location of development goal to remove Milton from the expedited area. The other interesting thing is that in 2010 that they did add a new development goal that they called land conservation, and they want to encourage long-term conservation of select areas. And here when you look at the regional area map that the staff prepared for you, when you zoom in on it so that you can see it close, you can see where that conservation easement is located, covering great deal area of Milton, and the long-term conservation efforts of private partners, the land trusts who hold that, are important to respect and recognize. That conservation easement includes not only land on the east, but also two large parcels over on Chamberlain Mountain itself. The natural resource goals include several that are important. Here's where the energy resources are found. And again, you heard this quoted before, utilizing indigenous energy resources when there are not overriding public values that require protection. And here, I think it should go without question that the bat hibernaculum, one of only three in the whole state, is an overriding public value that requires protection. And so avoiding risks to the bats by removing Milton is fully consistent with it. And I would suggest that, in fact, the opposite is true as well, is that if you were to keep it in here, that would be inconsistent with this part of the CLUP. Plant animal habitat resource goals as well, conserve and protect. In addition to the hibernaculum, there is also a deer wintering area. I believe that's located on Bryant Mountain. And then there is habitat for the migratory birds, the inland wildlife and wading value. These are all located throughout Milton, and so we're removing the entire township of Milton and protecting them all. And the recreational resources here, recreational resources, you want to conserve the natural resources that maintain that recreational environment. Even though there was focus on, oh, there's nothing really of value in Milton, but there's a lot of things of value around the area. Of course, we think Milton's got some good resources too, but certainly the regional area, the recreational environment of the folks that are coming in to Bethel, to Newry, to Rumford, includes the areas in Milton. And so conserving that recreational environment and not having the towers everywhere people look is going to be important. And the scenic values, again, protect the high-value scenic resources. And so, again, you've got some ridgelines here. They talked about, again, I think you'll hear the folks from EverPower and Stantec were talking about, oh, don't worry about the scenic. We'll take care of that in the development permitting process. Again, that's not what this is. You can't just assume that that's going to happen. We do need to apply the standard here and make sure that we protect the scenic resources here as well. For some, just a reminder of the location there, but just to list for you some of the specific areas, trails on Mount Zircon, Bald Mountain, Speckled Mountain, Rumford Whitecap, Black and White, and Mount Will. These are all hiking trails nearby where you can have some views of Chamberlain. Again, you're going to see some photos later in the afternoon. Commercial ski area on Mount Abrams has significant views of the Chamberlain-Bryant Mountain Ridge. Little Concord State Pond, Little Concord Pond State Park, again, is right in the shadow of Milton there. The North Pond, South Pond, and Round Pond that you see as you drive in on 26. And Androscoggin River Trail, you've got views from there as well. And then pleasure driving. Again, if you look at the BPL pre-hearing testimony, they talk about pleasure driving being an important recreational use in this area. And routes 26-2 and 232 all are valuable. So as the end of my legal part of the presentation, I think what's important to remember is that the question isn't whether wind development is consistent with the CLUP. The question is whether removing Milton from the expedited area is consistent with the CLUP. That's very important to keep that in mind when you're looking at all of these, the broad goals that are in the conservation land use plan. And I think that it's very easy to see that the answer to those is going to be yes, it's consistent with the CLUP if you remove it, and it is not going to have any unreasonable adverse impact on the energy goals. So we think that you should be removing Milton from the expedited area. I can answer legal questions now or after my folks give their testimony as well, whichever you prefer.
Any questions? Anyone have any questions? Paul?
I guess the first question is to the director. The goals set forward by the state was enacted by the legislature. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Ma'am, is it your contention that because the goals are not in the CLUP, then they are not necessarily a goal to be considered by the LUPC?
That's not my contention, and I apologize if I was confusing. The broad goals and the specific goals that I quoted in my presentation here are listed in the CLUP. Whether they were imposed upon you first by the legislature, I apologize that I don't know that off the top of my head. But they are in the CLUP, so they definitely would apply to that analysis here.
But as far as the wind power goal, do you think they're not? It's not part of the CLUP?
The wind energy goal, the statewide wind energy goal. It's not specifically identified in there, but that doesn't... One of the standards that you have to look at to decide whether to remove Milton is whether or not removing Milton will have an unreasonable adverse impact on achieving that goal. So whether it's in the CLUP or not, it stands as an independent standard that you're going to have to look at today.
Well, it is, and it was enacted by the legislature. And the legislature is the de facto government of the unorganized territory, the town fathers, if you will, of the unorganized territory. So we just can't merely ignore that.
Mike, I can't hear you.
Yeah. Can you get closer to the mic?
Yeah, so if I can answer your question, repeat it, or would you like to repeat it yourself?
Well, my point being that the town fathers for the unorganized territories across Maine, approximately 11 million acres, is the legislature. And when they set a goal, it must apply to this board as well as other agencies, DEP or any of the other agencies that will be involved in this if it goes forward.
Yeah. And so if I can respond to that concern, I appreciate that concern for sure. But again, the legislature, when it enacted those wind goals, they haven't modified the wind goals, or at least I missed it if they did, but they haven't modified them. And then they enacted the Wind Energy Act, which created the expedited area and which put Milton in it. So the legislature acted as the zoning voice without the voices of the public that you'll hear today. That was when the legislature said Milton should be in the expedited area. And then in 2015, when the legislature realized, gee, we should not have denied them of the voice, so they gave the unorganized territories the opportunity to try to remove if it was necessary. And when they did that in 2015, they did that and they specifically referenced the goals, which means they did know that the goals were still important, but they know that obviously removing any area that has a potential to produce wind will have an adverse effect on reaching the goals, and I think that is EverPower's point. The question that you as the board needs to decide after input from the public, the local community, is whether that adverse impact on reaching the goals, if any one megawatt that could be produced can't be removed from the LUPC territory, that, you know, any one megawatt is going to help reach those goals. But the question that needs to be answered here is, will the removal of Milton and the potential megawatts that Milton might add, will that have an unreasonable adverse impact on the goals? And when you look at the values that require protection in Milton, the wildlife values, the scenic and recreational values, which you'll hear a lot more about from people who are living up here, when you balance those values against the energy goals, the impact that this is going to make to try to reach by 2030 3,000 megawatts, I think that you can see that it's not an unreasonable adverse impact on meeting those energy goals.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right, move on with the presentation.
So I'm going to introduce myself one more time. My name is Violeta Wisbicki. Okay. I'm one of the petition circulators from Milton. I'd like to say that I'm going to be presenting and discussing animal habitats and scenic resources in Milton for most of my presentation. So we have been part-time residents of Milton for 7 years. On Roger Farnham Road. And last year, we bought a farm on Sierra Drive, also in Milton, with the plan of becoming full-time residents in the next few years. We bought our farm because we fell in love with the views of Bryant Mountain. November 2015, we noticed that a mat tower went up right in front of our windows. I started the petition to remove Milton from expedited area because I'm concerned about the lack of disclosure by EverPower and also their lack of concern for wildlife habitats. According to EverPower, they have been evaluating Milton as potential site since 2013, yet no one in our community has been notified. As to the issue of the good neighbor agreements, even though my view is directly impacted, I am not a neighbor to the proposed development, so the economic benefits that EverPower described would be unlikely to impact me or others that live in the valleys of Route 232 and Milton Road. Another issue I would like to point out, and I might repeat certain things that Sarah pointed out, that during the permitting process for the Met Tower, concerns about local bat hibernaculum were raised by Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. The recommendation was for the applicant to meet with LUPC coordinate, but unfortunately, they actually chose not to meet with them. And due to already operational Spruce Mountain wind project in the same area, concerns about cumulative impacts on bats from any other proposed wind development could not be overemphasized. So EverPower states in the letter to the commission that Milton does not have any important scenic and wildlife resources within the vicinity to the project. They did avoid the issue of the rare bat hibernaculum until really today. But they did point it out that Milton does not include any critical habitat for Atlantic salmon or Canadian lynx. And I think there will be no argument about that. But we will try to argue about the bats. Now, you say, why bats? Well, bats are very extremely important to the ecosystem. They eat thousands of insects per hour per bat. They are important to our farmers and our forests. They are our best pest control. And even now with the mosquito-related diseases like Zika and West Nile, bats are more important than ever. And bats face the most unified set of conservation threats. The white nose syndrome, which is a deadly fungal disease, has drastically reduced population of bats. Because of this disease, as Sarah mentioned before, little brown bat and northern long-eared bat were listed as endangered, and eastern small-footed bat were listed as threatened in 2015. So it just happened within a year. Main other five species of bats are all considered species of special concern, and that's since 2015 as well, per Wildlife Action Plan. The impact of white nose syndrome on Maine's bats population has raised concerns over effects of other mortality factors, such as wind turbines and the sensitivity of maternity colonies to disturbance. So there has been 5.5 million mortalities of bats from white nose syndrome, with the cave-dwelling species hit the hardest. So there has And also, there has been 600,000 deaths due to wind turbines. In 2011, white nose syndrome killed 90% of bats.
Excuse me. I think we will agree with your position that this is a critical issue. I don't really think you need to belabor it.
Okay. But I would like to also talk about I looked into the bat fatalities at wind turbines in Maine, and I didn't have to go far. I did use the Tetra Tech study for Spruce Mountain project, and they did a post-construction bird and bat fatality study. So the report was prepared for consultant representing wind developer. And I don't know if the results are biased or not, but the estimated number for bat fatalities for spruce was 25, and the actual for spruce was 24.3 per year, which is 2.5 bats per turbine. With another project in the same area, the number may more than doubles to 50 bats per year. So I would like to also stress the Spruce Mountain project went through the approval and construction before Maine bats were added to the endangered species list. And the impact of wind turbines on bats were also not known at that time. So I think that's very important. And on the side, during the same period of study, 6 bald eagles and 2 peregrine falcons were observed in a very close vicinity to the turbines. Peregrine falcons are on endangered lists, as well as bald eagles were, but they were removed in 2007, but are still protected by the Federal Eagle Protection Act. So there are a lot of nesting pairs of bald eagles known in Maine. There are several nests located in Peru, Mexico, and around North Pond and South Pond, which are only a few miles away from Bryan Pond. There are certain things that can decrease bat fatality and bird fatality related to wind turbines. The increasing cutting speed of turbine blades is one of them. This may reduce fatality by 50%, according to most studies. However, altering turbine operations, even on a limited basis, potentially poses operational and financial difficulties for the project. And also we have to talk about what affects the fatalities. There's a lot to consider: wind speeds, temperature, humidity, changing weather patterns. So the research suggests that the more studies need to be done so the patterns of bad behavior can be determined. And so we can see the 50% reduction in bat fatalities from changing turbine speed is adequate to mitigate impact on bats. Acoustic deterrents don't work on bats, and they're expensive, and they are not acceptable mitigation strategy to reduce bat fatalities. So in conclusion, I would like to remind everyone that Maine has 2/3 of its territory in expedited area, and there's only 15% of acreage would have to be developed to reach this goal, the state goal. And of all the land that is can be developed, very small percentage overlaps with wildlife habitats. And these areas should be avoided of any wind power development. And contrary to EverPower's statement, Milton is a beautiful rural area with nearby ski areas, Mount Abrams, Sunday River, and Black Mountain resorts within 5 to 20 minutes from Milton. And turbines would be visible from at least 2 of them. Hiking, boating, fishing, and rare bat hibernaculum are our assets in Milton. So let's not forget our main endangered species. And I would like to just make sure that your decision today, you know, we'll set precedents for the future of our state tomorrow. Thank you.
Any commissioner have a question? Would the timers tell me the time left?
They have until about 3:50.
Okay.
3 what?
50.
350?
I think so.
Right.
I doubt we'll reach that point, but we'll see what
the road. We'd appreciate it if you didn't, but you have it.
Absolutely.
And Matt, before you begin, there are a number of studies that were referenced there. If those are things that you want us to consider, it'd be helpful to submit them for the record, explain why, et cetera.
Yes, we're going to be submitting the things that we refer to in copies of our testimony and some written testimony by that deadline, the 22nd deadline.
Okay, thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. Once again, my name is Peter Fetchko, and I live on Billings Hill Road in Woodstock on the slopes of Chamberlain Mountain. With my wife of 47 years, Francoise, we purchased our land and built a cabin now almost 26 years ago. At that time, we had little thought of moving permanently to Maine. What first brought us to Maine was the attraction of the mountains in the vicinity of the town of Bethel. We used to bring our children hiking and camping in the Wild River area, the Mahoosic Mountains, Speckled Mountain, Bald Mountain, We did our shopping in Bethel, ate out occasionally, and introduced our children to kayaking and canoeing in the lakes of Woodstock, Greenwood, and on the Androscoggin River. We would often rent canoes at the store, now called the local hub, on Round Pond, and paddle our way through water lilies and pickerel weed to the greater expanse of North Pond, where at the head of the lake are beautiful views of Bryant and Mount Chamberlain. We would picnic on the town island known as the Rock, where we would swim in waters pure and clear in an extraordinary mountain setting, with loons and peregrine falcons, and today, even eagles. Our cabin was built by John Kimball, and our mason was Neil Donovan of Bethel. We had a great Rumford fireplace, a wood stove, gas lights, and beautiful, inspiring views of the surrounding mountains. In winter, we at first had to hike 1 mile up a snow machine trail and snowshoe the last tenth of a mile to our cabin door. That was until we met our neighbor, Pete Rosenberg, who was a dedicated snowmobiler and who would ferry us, our gear, and our guests all the way up Billings Hill. Pete was our first great introduction to Maine. He was the first of many Mainers that made our lives safer, happier, easier, and inspired us in the humanity of good neighbor policies. Though I served in the Army, I had not had a gun of my own until another good neighbor, Herschel Abbott, gave me a 16-gauge shotgun to make up for my obvious deficiencies. Herschel hunted the land we now own for over half a century and then taught me my great next lesson. From him we learned to respect Maine's traditions of hunting, fishing, and outdoor activities. Since then, our land has never been marred by a no trespassing sign and has never been posted. Our children matured, and so did we, and the time came to consider retirement. By then, we had many more friends, but there was still no winter access. A snowmobile was the answer, and Herschel Abbott would let us park at his place at the bottom of the hill. Not without a little anxiety did we move permanently to Maine in the year 2000. We added an addition to our cabin, and we built a woodshed, garage, a barn, several of outbuildings with the help of our friends. Paul Houseman of Albany added a solar system for electricity. We still have no line connection to the outside world, but we are happy, and our electricity is a gift from the sun. Here we are now in 2016, with winter access for the last 4 or 5 years, and on land first settled by Benjamin Frank Farrar, an original signer, and I quote, "for the mutual advantage of each other, into a body corporate to be known as the Union Society of Woodstock in the year 1858. By 1880, Ledyard York now occupied the site, and his cellar hole, barn foundation, and massive stone walls are clearly present. They, like many others, are now gone, but John Hunt and his son have hunted this land far longer than we have been here, and they plan to be here today to make comments to you. Our nearest neighbors, Jerry and Nicole Bernier, are volunteers for the Mahoosick Mountain Rescue. They just purchased the Rush Farm, a Civil War-era hill farm looking up to the summit of Chamberlain Mountain. We do not know how close they or we will be to a yet undefined wind farm project. How will it affect us? We do not know. What we sadly know, however, is that those that have the potential of financial gain are pitted against those that just want their land to be theirs, not to be infringed upon without due process. I and most of my immediate neighbors have been offered substantial sums ranging from $8,000 to $12,000 a year for 20 years. We know also that the majority of landowners that have the greatest potential for financial gain will not have to live in the presence of turbines because they are from away. Perhaps I am lucky, but my integrity and the integrity of the land I occupy, and I occupy it only temporarily, is more important to me. How will the character of Bethel, Woodstock, Greenwood, and Milton be affected. It is for all of these reasons we ask you, the commissioners, to be conservative and cautious for the mutual advantage of each other, like the 1858 Union Society of Woodstock. Thank you for your service to the great state of Maine.
Any commissioners have any questions?
Thank you. I have no slides to help me. May I submit two photographs? I'm sorry. Yeah. I have no slides to assist me here. May I offer two photographs to the commission?
I will submit these to staff, and they will put them on the website.
Thank you. Thank you. Again, my name is Warren Hillquist, and I'm going to try to describe for you an old farm, 300-acre farm that I've had for 51 years now in North Woodstock, and it has approximately 55 acres of broad hay fields that surround the house. You'll see in that photograph the views to the front, which go all the way down to Norway. To the west, they go over to the White Mountains. But the most important feature visually is the broad view that I have of Chamberlain Mountain, the entire western flank of it. And the property of the farm encompasses almost all of that flank. It rises, to the peak of Chamberlain. And it essentially establishes, for me, the character and the nature of that farm. If you see the farm in relation to Chamberlain, it's a dominant feature. It essentially makes the farm. It has an old farmhouse, which I've put a lot of hours and a lot of money into restoring. And if you sit on the porch and look at these views, you understand what a magnificent thing it was for people to have carved out of the woods in the early to mid-1800s. I bought two adjacent lots, not because I need more than 300 acres, but because I want to protect the views and the integrity of the place. And I've been thanked for the efforts in maintaining it by the locals who grew up there and used to hike it, hunt on it, and toboggan on it. They're very long, steep, broad fields, and it's a great recreational place. And it's not mine alone. I mean, I'm the steward of it at the moment, but all of these people have used it, and if they're known to me to be people who will be respectful of the land, I've invited them to come and use it anytime they want, whether I'm there or not. Hunt it, hike it, sit on the porch and enjoy the views. It's for the community. And in fact, there really are very few of these things left in existence. It's worth preserving and protecting, which I'm trying to do. If you hike to the top of Chamberlain, you'll be treated to, an absolutely spectacular view. Outstanding. It's something I like to do. And then I heard that there may be a wind farm on the top of that mountain. And I just pictured the trees being cut down, it being covered with crushed stone. And you look at these enormous rotating machines making a lot of noise. And I think, I'm not going to want to walk up there. And it's a resource that everyone in the community and from afar can enjoy. And they're not going to want to go up there either. So it'll destroy the top of the mountain for the purpose of recreation for a lot of people. But of course, I don't know where these towers are going to be. We really don't know anything about this project. So I asked, is Milton a suitable site for development? We are led to believe that there's nothing there of any great consequence. So I drove 3 days ago the three roads that form a triangle right at the base of these two mountains. 232, Milton Road, which goes right through the valley that is Milton Plantation, and then there's the Billings Hill Road, and I counted 119 houses. That's just on the road, and only as far as I could see on little spurs. I didn't count anything on the hills. I regard those as the distant. So 119 houses, if you take two people per house, that's maybe 240 people that have to be considered here. This is not an insignificant matter that bears no study. And then I ask myself, well, what can happen? What can go wrong here? What could the consequence be? And for that, I looked at the Concord Pond area of the Spruce Mountain Farm in Woodstock, and the impact was very modest in most places, except in the vicinity of the Concord Pond, Little Concord, Shag Ponds. And the negative consequences there were so severe that the town of Woodstock enacted a wind ordinance to protect itself in the future. Now, this project met all of the statutory requirements of the DEP, but everybody understands that those are not robust enough to protect the people who live nearby from what can go wrong with wind. And when I look at these two mountains and these three roads and all the people, these 119 houses, I see that many of them are in exactly the same topographic situation. There's nothing that intervenes visually and in terms of sound. So they could all suffer the same consequence. And the DEP will not. It's an unorganized territory. There's no one to speak for them. They don't have a government that can enact a wind ordinance to protect them. It's only the commission that can be their voice. Otherwise, they're essentially voiceless. So there's a very high risk of many people suffering. And, you know, all of the locals are going to lose their enjoyment. Those people in the immediate vicinity are going to lose their enjoyment of looking up onto their backyard and up onto these mountains. But everybody, locals and people distant, are going to lose the top of those mountains. They're going to lose them for recreation. They're going to lose them for a visual asset. And there's simply too many people here who stand to lose too much. I'm only one, but there are many here who stand to suffer great losses. So I would ask the commission to be proactive here and to make any developer who wants to put a facility in Milton demonstrate that the negatives, which are almost certain to occur here, have been contemplated and are not going to occur. Thank you.
Any questions? Would you like to make a summary statement?
The summary statement is that the two standards that you do have to apply would removing Milton cause an unreasonable adverse effect on the state's wind goals. I think the answer to that is no, removing it would not cause an the answer to that is yes, it would cause an... Talking double negatives, let me start that again. I knew I didn't want to talk again. The standards are whether removing Milton will cause an unreasonable adverse effect on meeting the state's wind goals, and removing Milton will not cause an unreasonable adverse effect, therefore it should be removed. The other standard is whether removing Milton is consistent with the principal values and the goals of the comprehensive land use plan, and I think that removing Milton is consistent with the comprehensive land use plan, so we do ask that you vote to remove Milton. We do have more time here, and obviously whatever you would like to do, but I know that one of the first public folks who had signed up has PowerPoint with some slides, and so we are willing to offer our time to Ed Rosenberg if that is acceptable to the commission.
What we're going to do now is we're going to take a five-minute break, and after the break, we're going to hear public testimony in the order that people signed up. Okay. Oh, we have one. I misspoke. We have one agency presentation to be made, which comes before the individuals. But then we're going to take the individual testimony in the order that you folks signed up, and we'll alert you. We'll read off three or four names so you know where you are on the list as we go through the public testimony. We're going to have to divide the time up. I think we adjourn this session at 4:30 or thereabouts before we start again at 5:30. Something like that. Anyway, let's take a 5-minute break.